American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Just a quick moment to thank today's sponsor, which is us. If you are listening to this episode on May 19th, today is the last day of the Approachable Birthday Sale. Go to www.approachablepodcast.com to get your Approachable Original Hoodie 25% off. That's approachablepodcast.com. Get your Approachable Original Hoodie 25% off. Sale ends today at midnight.
Hey, Alyssa.
Hey, Sam.
Are you ready for today?
I am ready, yeah.
Are you fired up?
I am a little fired up, I'll be honest.
I'm a little fired up, too. Okay. Stuck at the office or traffic jam. Time to take it easy with Alyssa and Sam. Is that show you know? A pro. So today we're going to be talking about kind of the overarching theme is like celebrity responsibility and do celebrities have responsibility to their audience in terms of like how they behave, how they, you know,
speak about issues,
show themselves on social media, etc.
Yeah.
Kind of what spearheaded this was the new Demi Lovato documentary that was on YouTube. There's just like, spoiler alert across the board, you're basically probably not going to have to watch it after listening to this. And also a trigger warning as well, because that documentary alone basically touches on like every issue that could possibly be triggering.
Yeah, like eating disorders, substance abuse, sexual assault.
Body image,
yeah. Suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole gambit.
Yeah.
But anyways, we watched this separately, but I think because you had watched it first and then you had said something to me about it.
Yeah. So when I initially had watched the documentary, here's like the linear feelings that I had. I believe in the first episode and the second episode, I was feeling pretty like confident about the documentary, and I was feeling like, wow, like this is wild. I'm so happy that she's found like meditation and she's finding balance within herself, like her emotions and stuff like that. And then episodes 3 and 4 is kind of when things is it moving? You want to be a part of the conversation? Let me teach you. Episodes 3 and 4 is kind of when I started getting have anxiety like thinking about this when I started feeling like, oh, Demi,
yeah,
you know. And I want to preface this by saying I have so much empathy for Demi. I really do. I think that she was failed by a lot of people very young. I think she was failed by her parents. I think that her team failed her, you know, society too, right? The pressure that we put on child actors and stuff like that. So I do have so much empathy for her. I'm just really sad to see where it kind of took a turn, and also therefore like how her life has kind of taken a turn. And so when I watched the 4th episode of the documentary, which is when Demi disclosed that she's California sober. So which,
just for those of you that maybe don't know like Demi's history. So Demi Lovato has a history of like eating disorders, substance abuse, kind of like all over the map. Like I believe like the final kind of like worst time was like heroin use and stuff like that, but has continually used like alcohol and stuff like that throughout, like since she was like 16 or something, I think.
Yeah, so Demi was quite famously sober from the age of 19 after she had kind of like really struggled with addiction. And so she's been sober like for most of her adult life, and then she had a really life-threatening overdose on fentanyl, actually. She thought that she was doing heroin, and she ended up having fentanyl. I'm getting such bad anxiety talking about this. And
And that overdose, like, resulted in, like, she has her vision's impaired from it. She has brain damage. She had, like, 3 strokes, a heart attack. Like,
yeah,
it was a pretty substantial, you know, overdose.
Yeah. And so when I watched the 4th episode, I had texted Sam and I was like, I'm not rooting for her to fail, mm-hmm. but I'm under the impression that she will relapse.
I'm anticipating it, yeah.
Yeah. And throughout the 4th episode, some things that really caught my eye, I wrote down some quotes. I don't even, like, know what, like, how to phrase this. Where to even start? You know what I mean?
Dude, I could talk about this documentary all day long because, so, for those of you that don't know, my husband Matt has struggled with addiction. He went to rehab. And so this is, like, a pretty prevalent conversation in our household, mm-hmm. I would say. You know, and for me, like, I kind of started it the same way where in the first few episodes I was like, oh, this is so good that she's talking about this, and, you know, she's really kind of putting it all out there because I think that you know, it is important to see kind of, like, the ugly bits, so yeah. to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily in, like, a horror story way, like, don't do drugs, kids, but, like, just, you know, like, this is what addiction looks like. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, how many people it affects and the ripple effect of it and, you know, all of that. And then in the final episode, I was like, oh, wow. Like, this went from being something that I think could be really helpful to something that's so deeply irresponsible, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Her whole thing with being, like, California sober is that she is continuing to drink alcohol and smoke weed in moderation, in her words.
Yeah.
and her whole kind of, I don't want to say justification, but the reasoning behind that is that she feels like too controlled otherwise, and that you know, complete sobriety doesn't work for her. It's hard to listen to that for me, because just based on everything that I know about addiction, and I haven't personally suffered with addiction, so I'll say that, but just based on everything that I know from Matt and my own research and just, like, talking to people about it, you know, I think that it's a very, very, very rare circumstance where an addict can continue to use substances in moderation and have that be successful for them long term.
Yeah.
And my concern with kind of posing this as a solution is that, to me, any addict watching that is going to listen and be like, perfect.
Yeah.
so I don't have to get sober because this is an option. Like, moderation is an option. And it's like, well, of course, like, you know, it starts out as moderation, but it so quickly turns into something else. And we know this. We know this about addiction. And we know that, you know, even if you are continuing to use substances that maybe wasn't, like, your drug of choice, just statistically speaking, it doesn't seem to really matter.
And I think that the thing that a lot of people think is that when addicts or people with substance abuse issues, when they relapse, it's going to look like it's portrayed in the movies, like they mm-hmm. just go on a crazy bender. It's like one night after the other. It's super hard drugs, but it doesn't always look like that. And in my experience, and I have struggled with addiction, and I don't disclose a lot of my life online for personal reasons, but I have a lot of experience in this, and that's why I don't really like touching on the subject as much, because I'm not willing to talk about my experiences fully. I talk about my experience with alcohol pretty openly, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I have knowledge. You know what I mean? I can talk about this. Let me just say that, okay?
Well, and also I think, because I think the thing that's tricky with talking about substance abuse and addiction and stuff like that is that I think a lot of people want to jump in and be like, you don't know what you're talking about. But it's like, but you have no idea, because whether I've dealt with it or like personally, or my husband or my family member or what, like, you have no idea. Addiction is so unbelievably widespread.
Yeah.
And it's also, in my opinion, really kind of, like, underdiagnosed a lot of the times as well, because it, especially with alcohol, so normalized.
Yeah.
So normalized. So anyway, so
yeah, on. No, for sure. So I think that there's such a misconception that it's going to be an all or nothing re-entry into the world of substances. And this was a conversation that I had with my boyfriend recently when we were talking about if I was ever going to drink again. And I said, and this is another thing that I always say, everyone knows if you watch the podcast or my channel, that I always say, I'm just not going to drink today. Yep. That's like my mantra. And I'm going to call back to that in a second, but you can never drink again without saying I'm never going to drink again. You know what I mean? And so I was having this conversation with my boyfriend and he was saying, oh, like if you had a drink, it would just be like you wouldn't stop that night sort of thing. And I'm like, but to me, that's such a misconception because that's not how it would go for me. I know that that's not how it would go. I would have a glass of wine with dinner. Mm-hmm. And then the next day I would have two glasses of wine with dinner. And then I wouldn't drink for 3 days.
Yeah.
And then I would have some beers. And then eventually, like, I think it would take months and months. But eventually now I'm back to hiding it.
Well, and it could take years even.
Yeah.
Like, it could seem truly like you do have it, like, under control, so to speak, for mm-hmm. a very, very long time. And then the problem with that, too, is that it's like the people around you might be looking at you being like, oh, you defeated addiction.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Like, good for you.
You did it, man. That's fucking awesome. Like, and that is, like, such a scary thing because it can just be happening and you cannot realize it. The people around you could not realize it so easily.
Well, and that to me is what's so scary about addiction is I think we also view active addiction in the most extreme ways. Mm-hmm. So we view it as homelessness and what someone might look like in a severe crack addiction or something like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what people think about when they think of severe addiction or addiction in general. And that's not always what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could fly under the radar for a really long time. I did it for years. I flew under the radar with active addiction.
Yeah.
And I could do it again. Do you know what I mean? And that to me is what's so scary about addicts is we are so manipulative and we are so not, and I don't mean to generalize, but
I think it's not a matter of, like that people that are addicts are inherently manipulative, but rather that addiction is inherently manipulative.
Yeah. And the thing with it is that my addiction comes first.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in active addiction, that's what comes first. And so if I want to be doing this, I'm going to find a way. And it doesn't even have to be like really detrimental to the other person manipulation. It's like, okay, me thinking, when are you going to bed?
Yeah.
So that I can now drink without worrying that you're going to call on me to come and see you, and then you can smell it on my breath. That sort of thing. Like, it doesn't always have to be this, like, it's I'm
lying by omission. Like,
exactly. And so I know that I could fly under the radar and go back into active addiction, and that's something that is scary. And that's why it scared me so much. I literally, like, again, my eyes are, like, watering. That's why it scared me so much watching the documentary with Demi, because I was watching it happen in front of my eyes, it felt, because in her documentary, she's open and honest about being manipulative and lying to the public and lying to her team. The whole way that she overdosed, her near-death overdose, was she was at a birthday party with one of her friends. They were having wine. Everybody went to bed. She had asked people to stay over. They didn't stay over. And then she called her dealer and got drugs. And to me, it's just like, how are these people still sitting here while she's saying, I'm just going to try moderation, knowing how good she is at flying under the radar? Because we don't know, because she did an entire documentary high on cocaine.
Yeah.
And she relapsed after doing her second documentary and was drinking right after it. I think it was a couple months that I'm not sure on the timeline. But to me, it's like, she's never giving herself enough time in one form of recovery to talk about it or to even fully deal with it. And I just want to pull to this quote that I took from the documentary. And the interviewer said, if there was ever a time you were going to use hard drugs, it would be after your engagement. So something else that I've learned through addiction is that you can get addicted to anything. Doesn't mean you will, but I'm the type of person who can get addicted to anything. And by anything, I mean people, exercise, like genuinely anything, like things that I was like, this is an addiction, you know, and these are things that I've worked through with my therapist to figure out, like, this is crazy that, like,
I'm... Well, and not, sorry to cut you off, but no. Not even addiction in like a, like, overly, you know, like diving into something, but also like in a restrictive way as well, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And in the third episode, I think it was, Demi disclosed that she had gotten engaged, and she got engaged quite rapidly. And something else that I know about addiction is that it can make you quite impulsive as well, and do things you normally wouldn't do. And when I heard this, when I heard that she had invited her boyfriend to live with her during quarantine and stuff like that, I saw myself in that instance. I was like, oh, you're attaching yourself, your addiction to a person now. Mm-hmm. And that's just me like speculating, obviously. But it makes sense to me in the kind of like range of addiction. And then in the next episode, she had called off her engagement. And again, to me, I was like, okay, so, you know, could it have been true love that you found your one? For sure. But seeing how quickly the engagement dissolved, do you know what I mean? It kind of just like solidified it for me. And when the interview said that, when he said, interviewer said that, he said, if there was ever a time you were going to use hard drugs, it would be after your engagement. I felt sad again because I was like, yes, definitely. Big life events, things that hurt you, things that bring you down, you're more vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? But I feel like that, again, is a misconception that you have to have a reason to go back to your addiction. And that's not true.
Well, and I think that is the very unfortunate thing about it is it could be the literal exact opposite where you're like, you know what? Like, things are going really good. I feel like I have a really good handle on my addiction. I feel like, you know, there's nothing that's really triggering me. So why can't I have a beer? Mm-hmm. Like, it can be that simple. And to speak more to the addicted to people thing, that was part of Matt's suggested, like, after recovery kind of thing. Like, once he got out of rehab, they suggested that he didn't date at all for a full year afterwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Because it is so easy to kind of, you know, just old habits die hard, you know what I mean? Whether it's a substance or a person or a behavior or whatever.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go back to the manipulation thing too, because the thing that I thought was so fucking bizarre is that, like, she herself multiple times throughout the documentary mentioned how manipulative she was and how good she was at hiding it. Her best friends, her siblings, her parents, her team, all of these people also agreed with that, being like, she's so manipulative, she's so good at hiding it. Like, if she doesn't want you to know, you won't, blah, blah, blah. And then went on to basically support, not even basically, in my opinion, just completely support her decided path of, like, moderation, which, I mean, of course, like, it's such a fine line, because, like, on one hand, it's like, yeah, you do want to be there for people, but at the same time, it's like, when does that cross the line from you're there for them and you're supporting them to now you're enabling them, knowing what you know about addiction, knowing what you know about their personality and their ability to hide things. And it's like, it's just so odd to me that all these people are kind of like, yeah, I think Demi's really found a good balance. I think she's really, like, it's just like, but you actually can't know. Like, yeah. you literally cannot know that.
Well, and I think that you're pulling from the mom said that. I remember that line that she spoke, and I was just like, oh my good God. This is just wild to me. I think she might have said moderation. She's doing what works for her, and she's found moderation.
The sister as well said she found balance.
Just, okay. The thing with addiction, the issue with addiction is there is no moderation. And Demi is an addict. And regardless if you think that it's moderation for them right now, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And you don't know what it looks like 2 years later.
Yeah.
And Elton John, my man, in that documentary, when
voice of reason, like, just freaking breaking up all the, like, oh my God, the yes chaos. Men. Yeah.
Yeah. in the documentary, I'm so glad that they left this in. I was surprised, actually, but I thought that it was, like, pretty good of them to leave it in. He said moderation doesn't work. Sorry. Yeah. If you have a drink, you're going to have another one. If you take a pill, you're going to take another one. And I'm not trying to discredit anyone who is living in moderation. Never met one.
Yeah.
Is the thing. You know, alcohol wasn't my drug of choice.
Yeah.
Quite frankly. And I didn't like drinking alcohol. And then here we are.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just know not for me. And I know a lot of people with substance abuse issues and addiction. And, you know, there was another quote in here where Demi said, I know it doesn't work for me, shutting the door on things and saying I'm never doing these things again. And
of course it doesn't work, because you don't want that as an addict, of course.
But furthermore, this is like my thing is you don't have to say that.
Mm.
You can do it without saying it. I don't say that. It scares the shit out of me. It scares me to be like, I'm never going to have a drink again. I'm not going to drink on my wedding night. I'm not going to drink whatever on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
I don't like thinking about that. But I spoke about this a couple weeks ago. Can't remember to who. But I was saying, when I was worrying about that, when I was thinking about my future without substances, I was worrying about an issue that actually didn't exist yet. So I was speaking back to your wedding, because I was quite newly sober at your wedding, and I was thinking about it, and I'm like, all these people are going to be drinking, they're going to be having so much fun, I'm not going to be able to drink, I'm going to feel awkward, I'm going to wish I was drinking. So it was like this lead up where I was like kind of upset about it.
Yeah.
But when the day actually came, I didn't care. You know what I mean? And I'm lucky that alcohol wasn't super triggering for me at that time. But for my personal experience, it was like the lead up was so much worse, because when the day actually came, people actually weren't drinking as much as I recall people drinking, maybe because that's how much I drank. So I thought everybody was drinking as much as I was, but it wasn't the center focus for really anybody. I was so happy to be there with you. You know, the day was about so much more than champagne, you know? And so my feeling when she said that was, okay, but you don't have to say that. Let's change the mindset instead of changing the substances that you're taking into your body. So let's keep the substances away, but change your mindset. You don't have to say you're never going to do it again. Just wake up and say, not going to do it today.
Yeah. Well, you know? And I think, like to your point, it's like that does make it so much more daunting to say that you're not going to do anything ever again is daunting. And, you know, it's, to me, it's kind of akin as well to, like if you can't relate to addiction at all, like even just saying like, I'm going to go to the gym 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Well, that's fucking daunting as hell. Like, you know, you probably could make it there, but like if you have never been to the gym before and then you're trying to like go all or nothing, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a big lifestyle change.
But it's like, just drive yourself there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to go and do 2 hours of cardio. Just drive yourself there, you know? Don't worry about all of these other things that are going on in the addiction world. It's like, okay, let's just, today,
we're not
going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that quote, she said, so the first one was, I know it doesn't work for me shutting the door on things and saying I'm never doing these again. And almost directly after, she said, I know I'm done with the stuff that's going to kill me.
That line in particular really fucking got me.
And so this is hard for me too, because if you truly believe that saying, no, I'm never going to do this again doesn't work for you, and then you're following it up with, I know I'm done, that's concerning for me, because I'm finding a discrepancy in your mindset.
Yeah.
So that's fine, but like, let's figure out where you're actually at so that we can go ahead with that mindset and every day repeat the same thing to yourself. So it's either I'm done with the things that are going to kill me, or I'm not going to die today because of my addiction.
Yeah.
Right. And then right after that, in the same sentence, she said, but I wish that I could get some relief through weed or something. Again, very concerning statements to me. And I'm just so surprised that her team, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but in the documentary, it seemed that her team was quite supportive. Some people were saying, I'm not completely 100% with it. Regardless, you're not saying no, you're not dropping her from your roster because of it, right? Like, you are enabling this at the end of the day. Her family, you know, her mom was like, yeah, she's great.
Well, and I think her mom also echoed that this isn't something that's going to kill her, which I also just want to point out. Okay, weed, no, probably not going to kill you. Alcohol absolutely can kill you.
Yeah.
And it does. Like, this is a huge issue that I think is, like, very it's not noticed enough or paid enough attention to with alcohol specifically. And also, she did struggle with alcohol addiction before. It wasn't maybe, like, the main thing that led to, like, a lot of medical complications, but it very easily can be. And again, it's just, you know, these things can so often lead from one thing to the next. But anyways, carry on.
Yeah, well, and exactly. I'm going to circle back to that in just a sec. So the thing about her saying, just to get some relief, again, huge issues there, that you are thinking about drugs as a prescription for your mental health.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, marijuana can be used for a lot of things. I take CBD for anxiety. So I understand that there are some benefits to certain plants. You know what I mean? I get it. I think the issue here is that, number one, she specifically chose to say weed instead of alcohol. And maybe I'm reading into it, but I think that that elicits more of an empathetic response from people, because there are medical benefits to or perceived medical benefits that haven't been studied enough for us to have like a conclusive idea on it. But had she said through alcohol, I think she would have elicited a different response.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. And I think that that was like a pointed choice that she made. And with alcohol and her mom saying this isn't something that's going to kill her, her overdose was started by alcohol because she was intoxicated, and she had been using before that. But in my experience, alcohol often leads to worse things. So if you are known to do harder substances, you're more likely to do them if you're already intoxicated, because that's just how alcohol works.
Well, and even if you just have like risky behavior or impulse control or whatever, like not even necessarily leading to drugs, but just leading to generally poor decisions potentially.
Yeah. And that's not even like touching on the fact that alcohol is such a dangerous substance to some as well. And again, I'm if you want to drink, you know what I mean? It's when you have an issue with a substance that it becomes like a bigger issue.
Well, no, I was going to say that too, just touching on that with, you know, marijuana and stuff like that, because there is a huge, huge difference in my opinion, at least, between, an addict using marijuana and, someone that doesn't struggle with substance abuse using marijuana and drinking, and honestly, even just like using other types of drugs like recreationally and stuff like that. There's a huge difference between that if you're not somebody that struggles with that impulse control and substance abuse.
Yeah. And it's not in a judgment way at all. My concern is that she's surrounded by so many yes men that are saying, yeah, okay, because they're scared of her, because she's posed this now in a way that says, if you tell me to be completely sober, I'm going to go off the deep end and I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And that puts you in a really, really bad situation as a friend, as a family member, and as a part of her team, because that's essentially saying, like, to me, it's the same as or similar to people threatening suicide if you leave them. Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, if you tell me what to do, I'm just going to go take a bunch of fentanyl.
Yeah.
That's so manipulative. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge issue in the mental health just based on that whole thing alone. And something else that she talked about was that she struggles with depression like really, really deeply. And so she does have, you know, she struggles with her mental health, and it's completely natural, honestly. Like, it's a normal thing that stems with addicts that they start using drugs to self-medicate. And so when I heard her say to get some relief, I know that she's still in the mindset of, I'm just trying to self-medicate, whether that's her depression, whether that's her eating disorder, don't know. But let's fix the main issue, which is your mental health.
Yeah.
You know, and alcohol is a depressant.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that a lot of people forget that, because in the moment it can make you feel warm and fuzzy, but it's absolutely a depressant.
Yeah. But yeah, like on the mental health point, it's just, to me, there's clearly still underlying issues that haven't been resolved. And something also that I wanted to bring up that I thought was really interesting, and I didn't really catch this, which I'm kind of surprised by, but I watched this guy on YouTube. He's a therapist. His name's Dr. Kirk Honda, and he has a YouTube channel called Psychology in Seattle. And he's the best. I fucking love his channel so much. I like binge it like so hard. But he did videos reacting to this documentary. And one of the things that he brought up is that he was like, you know, worth mentioning that she has brain damage still from this. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I was like, oh, wow, I'm so shocked that I didn't even consider that. No, because for those of you that don't know, my brother has brain damage from a car accident that's it's just persisted for years and years, obviously. And one of the things with brain damage is that we know so little about it. but I know that for my brother, like he does have a hard time, you know, coming to the same conclusions that maybe like you or I would very easily. He has a hard time like with right from wrong. He can kind of like find himself in sticky situations really, really easily. And so for me, I was like, oh, wow, like that could be such a substantial factor that like not even she realizes how like that underlying issue could be like lending to her being able to justify things like moderation, you know. Right. And that was just such an interesting point to me that I wanted to like bring up as well, because it's all of these, you know, all of these health impacts, they do have long-term effects as well, and they all play into where you're at now. So it's like, I think that we do ourselves a disservice by looking at someone like Demi and saying, well, she seems under control. But it's like, but you need that context of that history and all the ways that, like, you know, she struggles with addiction. You know, she struggles with manipulation around addiction. You know, she struggles with her mental health. You know that this has been like the health impact from that. Like, you know, that context matters, and it's important in regards to how you're perceiving that person, because it's so easy to be like, well, I don't struggle with addiction. That's what I look like when I drink. Like I, mm-hmm. you know, go out and have a beer with dinner and I'm fine. And I think that we so much like don't want to believe that, you know, the people we care about could be manipulating us. Like we want to believe the best. We want to root for them. And not that, like, again, like I'm not, I wouldn't be like rooting for her or anyone else that I know that struggles with addiction, right. But it's just, it is that fine line of rooting for them and supporting them and being there for them, but also knowing when you're enabling them and being able to recognize that and put your foot down, because that is a really important aspect of recovery as well. And when Matt was going into rehab, that was something that, before he got there, the counselors that worked there were talking to his parents on the phone, and they were like, you have to tell him that this, you're not going to let him come back to your house, you're not going to support him financially, you're not going, like, this is it, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, we're cutting you out, and that's that kind of thing, whether or not that would end up being true, but like,
right.
you know, they said, like, this is really important for you to make sure he knows that, like, you're not going to continue to be there, because there are so many instances, especially with like parents to kids, where the parents just, I think, want to believe so badly that their kid's going to be okay and that they're going to pull themselves out of it and that, like, they're not manipulating them and whatever. And then we see so many instances where, you know, addicts are like sometimes like bleeding families dry. Mm-hmm. Resource-wise, financially, emotionally, because you just keep believing in and believing in and believing in. Of course, that's what we do, but it's to not only your detriment, but potentially the person who's struggling with addiction's detriment as well.
Yeah, and something that Demi said in the documentary was that, I didn't write it down, so this is not a quote, but it was, an addict shouldn't be forced to get help. They shouldn't be forced to quit their substance, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And I agree that you need to want to get better for sure. But I think that there's merit in creating an environment where it doesn't look so fun to be in your addiction anymore. Yeah. And in my scenario, I had to hit rock bottom a couple of times before I got sober, you know, and the thing is I've gotten sober a couple times,
yeah,
you know, and for different like lengths of time. And this is the longest that I've been sober, which like, woo, yeah, almost 2 years. But in
which is crazy because it feels like it's been always.
That's so nice to hear that.
Yeah. Like it really, like it's so like it is like two different people in my mind. It's so weird.
Yeah. Have fun though. Yeah. But it's true. Like when people didn't know, when I was manipulating them so that they didn't think it was as bad as it was or whatever, it was a lot easier to continue to be in my addictions. Mm-hmm. And I think that the same is for a lot of people. And there are some people who hit rock bottom and they just don't make it. And I think that that is the fear with families, specifically families, that if they cut them off and, you know, so to speak, like send them onto the streets sort of thing, that they won't make it. And that is like a possibility. Mm-hmm. And so I can empathize with that as well.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is. I know that it's hard. But I just don't think that it was responsible even for her to say that she doesn't think that, addicts should have to get help if they don't want to, because sometimes you don't want to get help in the beginning too, right? And then you can come to your own, you know, your own acceptance of your recovery. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. That one's hard for me.
Yeah. Well, I agree that you can't force someone into recovery, but I think that you also don't have to be a bystander to it either. Mm-hmm. Like I think that you can choose to remove yourself from that situation. And I don't think that that even makes you a bad person, because I think to continually force yourself to be a bystander to someone else's addiction, I don't think that that's fair. Mm-hmm. If that's not what you're willing to, like, you know, take on emotionally and mentally, because like that is a huge, huge burden. And it's such a sad aspect of addiction, because like we do have that mentality of like, well, if I stop supporting this person, if I stop allowing this person to be in my life, is that going to be what pushes them over the edge? Mm-hmm. And like, if you know, it's like there's all these what ifs that you're kind of like putting back on yourself. But I mean, overall with this whole documentary, like it's just, I just feel like it was so irresponsible, because to me, here's what I would have preferred. Release a documentary with where you're at. And I think that that's perfectly fine to be like, you know, I'm still struggling, I'm still figuring it out, whatever kind of thing. I think the biggest issue to, really the only issue to me, is that she was posing this as like a solution, mm-hmm. when this hasn't worked for you long term yet.
Yeah.
I think it's one thing to be like, this is where I'm at. Like, I have relapsed. I'm continuing to use substances. Like, this is what addiction looks like, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's all perfectly fine and well. Like, I do, again, think that it's important to acknowledge that. And, you know, I want to say as well that, like, I don't want anyone to think that, like, me or you or, like, or anyone is, like, trying to villainize addicts, because that's not it. But there is just some, like, the manipulation and that mindset, and like those are things that we see predominantly with that couples with addiction, and it's, you know, like those aren't necessarily super admirable traits, but it's not something where, you know, I think all addicts are bad people. Of course I'm married to one. Yeah. You know, like it's a disease, and it's something that is really, you have to be so careful with, you know, just accepting it for what it is, honestly, in my opinion.
Well, and if anything, I feel like talking about the realities of addiction helps humanize
mm-hmm.
addicts, or those with substance abuse issues. And I think that it's important, because I don't think that we don't talk about it enough, the behind the scenes of addiction. Yeah. We see something, we're scared of it, we look the other way. Mm-hmm. And that's not, I don't think that that's the way that we kind of like come together on this issue.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, there's an insane opioid crisis right now. And, you know, the opioids that are on the streets are absolutely killing people, like,
yeah,
in droves. So it's a really scary time. And I think that if we understand the why more, mm-hmm, behind addiction and like some of the things that it can present as, and that they're oftentimes not as scary as we think, then we can get to understand it. And then it's like, okay, now there's some humanization around it. Yeah. And now we actually want to help and such.
Well, and it's like, it's pertinent to have that understanding so that we can actually help and we can actually, you know, because for me, like when I started dating Matt, and I already like knew a fair amount about addiction, but like I've learned a lot more like having been with him, because, you know, I would see certain behaviors in him that I would really struggle with, and I would take it kind of like personally. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, why am I not enough? Like, why, you know, it seems like you're still kind of, you know, because like when we first started dating, he would say things like that he didn't like being sober and that he, you know, didn't enjoy his life like that and whatever. And I'd be like, oh, well, you know, that's like hurtful for me because I want to be enough for you. And so like through conversations with him, through conversations with my therapist, like gaining the understanding of like, you know, this is an impulse control issue. Like it really has nothing to do with anyone. Mm-hmm. Like it can have things to do with outside people in like a trauma sense, but, mm-hmm, but you know, it's nothing to do with like you not being enough. It's just like, this is an impulse control and this is a different part of the brain that's like, you know, lending to these things. And for me, having that understanding and having that context of like, what does addiction really look like? What does that mean? How does that translate when someone's not in active addiction right now?
Yeah.
It has been so helpful for me to be more sympathetic, to not only Matt, but just like people all over the place, and to also have an understanding that like addiction doesn't always look how you think it's going to look. And that's really important to know. Mm-hmm. And I just think like all of that to say, I would feel a lot differently if, to me, I feel like she's almost, I don't want to say glamorizing, but just making it seem like this is like a viable option, which it can be, I suppose, in like very rare circumstances. I don't think to the point where it's worth like a PSA of saying like, let's try moderation, guys. Like just, yeah, as a whole, let's try it. And I also think that it would be different if, you know, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, she was doing a documentary being like, look at like moderation is what worked for me. That might not be true for you, but that's what worked for me. And mm-hmm, like, here we go. That's my story. Because that, you know, I think that if you struggle with addiction, it's something that you continue to struggle with your whole life in different ways, but I would feel a lot differently about it if that genuinely, we could see like history of that being a viable solution for her.
Yeah. In the documentary, there were a couple of times where they said, just because this works for me doesn't mean it works for you. Mm-hmm. Recovery isn't a one-size-fits-all thing. To me, I have to be completely honest here. Like, I can't even PR this. Like, to me, that was for PR.
Yeah.
Number one. And again, just going to be honest, I don't think moderation works for addicts.
Yeah.
You know, am I going to catch some heat for that? Maybe. But that is my personal opinion. And I just can't sit here and be like, okay, for addicts, I do not believe that moderation works. I think that if it works, it works for a very short amount of time, mm-hmm, or it looks like it's working and it's not.
Yeah.
I'm talking about addicts with addiction, right? Yeah. Like there's people who do struggle with like phases, you know what I mean? Of substance abuse and stuff like that. There's differences here, right? Mm-hmm. But no, I don't believe that it works. And I think it's really dangerous that she put out that documentary. And quite honestly, I was like, I wonder if I could smoke weed.
Yeah.
You know what? Knowing everything that I know, still a part of my brain was like, mm-hmm, I wonder if I could smoke weed. And I said this to you the other day. I was like, but then I was driving home and realized I would have to take a no sober date.
Yeah.
And that's what stopped me. My sobriety stopped me. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I do feel like I'm quite strong in my sobriety. And I feel like I have, like, I had so many resources in therapy and stuff like that to help me, like, overcome a lot of these issues. And there's people who don't have my years of experience and people around me in a support system who might think, maybe I can smoke weed, maybe I can have a drink.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that is truly so dangerous. And I just, I really do hate that it turned out that way.
Yeah.
I don't think, sorry, I'm going on a soapbox now. I don't think that Demi has to be the poster child for sobriety. I know that that was really hard for her.
Of course not. Yeah. Yeah.
She had to carry that, like, sobriety flag through her 20s, mm-hmm. you know, and there's that's a lot of pressure on a young person and somebody who is in the public eye and from such a young age who went through traumas, you know, really young. I think that that was a mistake of her team to, you know, tote her like that, like yeah. as this, you know, poster child for sobriety. And I get that she doesn't want to be that anymore. And that's, you know, I think that that's a healthier option for her too.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that you should be sitting up there saying, like, you're so balanced and things are, mm-hmm. you know, going so you're no longer jailed by things. Even with her eating disorder more recently, I did write down a quote as well. I will let this go. She said, it no longer rules my life. I no longer feel like I'm in a prison. And more recently, there was this whole thing that went, like, viral over a frozen yogurt shop, where she was, like, really, really triggered in her eating disorder because she saw, like, this sign that said guilt-free.
Yeah.
Which I don't agree with that messaging either.
Yeah.
You know, but the frozen yogurt shop had all of these different options, and they were stating that it was for dietary
restrictions
and stuff. And we kind of saw Demi unravel a little bit, and I think that her intentions were pure, but I don't know that you can say that the voice is, in the documentary she said the voice is so quiet
yeah.
with her eating disorder, and that she feels free and she's no longer in a prison. To me, again, that shows me you do believe that you're in such a different place than you're at.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to be honest with yourself. In the beginning, I could not go to a restaurant
yeah.
and even eat dinner because I couldn't put myself in a situation where I could order a beer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that it's dangerous to think that you are so much further along in your recovery than you are, because then you're putting yourself in those situations.
Yeah.
And so to me, the eating disorder statement and that experience for her in the frozen yogurt shop, I can see how that could be the same in her addictions.
Yeah.
So thinking that she's so much further along that moderation is going to work for her long term, but in reality, not.
Yeah. Well, and I do think as well, going back to like them saying, like, you know, this doesn't necessarily work for everyone kind of thing. I think that was so glossed over. It was mentioned for sure, but I agree that it felt more like, we're saying this because we have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, let's make sure that we, like, put that in there sort of thing. Because it wasn't like they went into the whys behind that. Like,
yeah.
You know, and here's all the reasons why moderation doesn't work most of the time. And we know this. Like, we know this medically speaking, like, that this doesn't work. And I think that also it was, like, that messaging already wasn't substantial enough, in my opinion, and then it fell flat even more when you have all these people around Demi saying, you know, that yeah, she is balanced and she's in a good place, and you know, I think she understands, like, her limitations and whatever. And also something that I didn't like about the documentary is how they kind of paralleled her eating disorder to her sobriety. There was one part where they were talking about how for years, like, her team would get her cakes for her birthday that were watermelon.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, she was in the documentary having a drink with her friends and having an actual cake for her birthday. Mm-hmm. And her one best friend was like, you know, I just think it's so great that, you know, we can go and we can enjoy the weekend and we can eat whatever we want and we can whatever. But it's like, eating disorders are so different from substance abuse, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that you brought up the point to me when we were talking about this privately that, like, you can't not eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why moderation works for an eating disorder. And, you know, because, of course, it has to. You have to eat. Like, there is no option. There's no way around that. And that's not the same for substances, you know, like alcohol and weed and et cetera. And I think that there's danger in comparing the two, because to me, it's like you're just trying to find all of these pathways to say, look how moderation works. Look how not closing the door on things works.
Yeah.
But it's not the same thing. So yeah. But to people that are hearing it that don't know enough about addiction, that are in active addiction themselves, they can hear that and go, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. And then, you know, the person that then goes on from watching that documentary and they maybe have someone in their life struggling with substance abuse and they're like, well, you know, maybe you cut out this stuff, but like, yeah, you just keep alcohol and like, that's fine. And then we can still drink on the weekends together. And like, you know, I'll keep an eye on you and like, we'll know whether or not you're going off the deep end. But it's like, you can be around someone 24 hours a day and they can still be hiding it from you. Like,
oh, for sure.
You're not going into the bathroom with them. You're not, you know, like it is so much harder to detect than we think. So I just, that whole messaging to me at the end was just like, oh, what a disappointing wrap up to something, yeah, that could have been so, so helpful, because it made the entire rest of the documentary to me be like, I was like, oh, so that now, you know, I still commend her for being forthcoming about all of this, because it is, it's difficult. I'm sure it's difficult for her to talk about. I'm sure that there's some amount of like shame associated with this for her. Obviously she's like in the public eye, which makes it that much harder. Like,
yeah,
you know, I commend her for speaking about it. I'm just like so disappointed that that was how it unfolded at the end.
Yeah. I'm not even disappointed in her, is the thing, because she's, in my opinion, she's not well right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that I'm disappointed in her team.
Yeah.
And not even her family, because her family has to struggle, you know,
alongside
everyone. Yeah. Everyone struggles when someone you love is in active addiction. And even in sobriety sometimes, because there's, you know, things that carry through, but her team is the one that gets paid,
yeah,
you know, and they need to be the ones to say, hey, maybe you're not ready to talk about this yet.
Yeah.
And they were filming a documentary prior. And so it makes sense to me, because they had to scrap that documentary, it makes sense to me that they want to protect their assets. And they're, yeah, like, hey, we need to, you know, create a documentary. I think you're ready to talk about this. Let's center it around this. Let's do this, you know. And she talks about making a lot of her own decisions and that it's important to make her decisions. But if you think that people can't pose something to you and make it seem like it's your decision, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying I see stuff like this, have seen stuff like this at such a smaller scale so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to pick it out now and see, like, call the bullshit, basically.
Yeah.
And not her bullshit, but just the big business,
mm-hmm,
of her, because she is a business, right? Yeah. And I also don't judge her for being California sober. I just don't like that it is posed in the way it was in the documentary.
Yeah. That was something too that therapist that I follow on YouTube spoke to, is that he was like, you know, she keeps referencing how grateful she is for her team, and then when she talks about her team, you know, she references like her manager and her security guard and whatever. And he was like, I'm not hearing a whole lot of like there was a couple times where she was like, you know, my therapist and my case manager, and he was like, I'm not really sure like what her case manager, I don't really understand like what that person is doing or who they are in relation to like her sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, you know, even with like her therapist, we don't know what kind of therapist this is.
Yeah.
And he was like, there's such a range of therapists. Like, there's people that are really, they just completely take a back seat and they're like, you know what, like, you come here and talk to me and whatever, like, and they're not as hands-on. There's other people that are really hands-on. There's people that would confront her, mm-hmm, about her behavior. There's therapists that wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, and I think that's important to note, because we're not hearing, you know, my sponsor or, mm-hmm, my, you know, like NA meetings that I go to every single day, or my AA meetings that I go to every single day. We're not hearing like what type of therapist she has. We're not hearing, you know, like if she has a substance abuse specialist that she works with. Like, those are the things that like from his thing, he was like, that's what I would suggest as like her treatment plan. That's what I would suggest her team to look like.
Right.
So, you know, when you're referencing your team as not those things, he was like, that's really concerning.
Yeah.
You know, like, because it's just like you, like, you can feel really good about where you are at in life and feel like I have a good group around me. And that could be true. Like, you could have a good support system around you. It doesn't mean that it's the right support system.
Yeah. So true.
Man.
I do remember when I told my therapist that I wanted to try weed, and she was like, maybe best you don't.
And also, we could not do that.
And I was like, oh, you think? She's like, yeah, no. And I was like, okay.
Fucking fair enough.
And fair enough. Yeah. And so I didn't.
Oh, boy. But, well, and that's the thing, too. Like, you know, like, it's if you have people around you that are like, yeah, that sounds, because again, it's like, if you don't struggle with addiction yourself, yeah, beer on the weekend doesn't sound fucking outrageous to mm-hmm. like anyone, you know what I mean? Like, that's not, so like, if your friend was coming to you being like, oh, like, I just, you know, it's my birthday, we're in Palm Springs, like, I just like really like would love to like have a cocktail with you guys, like, you know, it's so easy for someone else to be like, that sounds
reasonable,
yeah, okay. I will make you a cocktail, like, you know, like, it's, but therein lies the issue.
Yeah.
You know, not enough understanding. So, so to circle back to our original question.
Oh my goodness.
What do you feel like, what responsibility do you feel like celebrities carry around, you know, messaging and how they should be presenting themselves to their audience and all of that?
So I don't think that celebrities have a responsibility to disclose anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you want to struggle with addiction behind the scenes, that is your right. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go through recovery behind the scenes, that is also your right. What I think when the responsibility comes in is when you decide to make something public, in my opinion. If it's made public against your will, mm-hmm. that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
You know, but if it's made public against your will, I don't really think that you'd be making like a documentary talking about it. Don't know.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's a responsibility to watch. I mean, this sounds so like dumbed down, but like watch what you say and like
yeah.
really understand the implications of what you're doing. And like, I do feel like even at such a freaking small scale, you know what I mean? Like, I try to do that in my own
yeah.
situations. Like, I try to think, okay, how can I word this so that I'm being respectful? And am I thinking about all of the harm I could cause by what I'm talking about? And certain times, like when I say I just need to be honest and I don't think moderation works, it's like, okay, it goes out the window because yeah. I just need to be honest. But sometimes I think it's just like better just to not say anything.
Yeah.
Then. So I do think that there's a responsibility there to watch the harm that you could possibly be creating. And especially with this, like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's a lot. And I think that she's been doing it for a while. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this whole, like, documentary thing. And especially with the team, like, she's got to have PR. You know, they were scared to call the ambulance.
Yeah.
So she's got PR.
Yeah.
You know, on her side. And so
there's clearly still those people that are, like, on her team that aren't just, like, rah-rah Demi. Like, you rock. Like, we're here for you. Like, you know, it's, like, there's still the people that are clearly trying to...
Yeah, to
control the situation.
Yeah, which I think is important because there are so many people who are impressionable, and there's some people who are like, how could you be impressioned by this?
Mm.
But those you're probably not the person who's going to be affected by that then.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many people who are influenced by celebrities, like directly, like our entire culture is, you know, in North America is, you know, basically off of 5 or 10 celebrities, you know what I mean? Like the yeah. fashion and stuff like that. I mean, like the fashion culture world and social media and stuff like that. The way that those trends move is like, I mean, I could see like a handful of people that influence that.
Yeah.
So I think that it's important to note that it absolutely does make a huge difference. And I think from reading the comments on the docu-series, I'm so glad that I'm seeing so many addicts like coming through and saying what they believe to be true, which is
yeah.
that, you know, sobriety.
Yeah. Well, and I do think too that like the whole arc of that storyline of the documentary to me was like in the beginning, like, oh, this very harrowing, like, oh my God, poor Demi, like this is so scary, like her poor family, like it was like very sad and somber. And then it ended on, and now I'm California sober and here's my new house and I look great and, you know, like I'm prioritizing myself and I have this great team. And like, you know, they were talking about like how she's involved with like politics, like, yeah. You know, like they were kind of posing it as like how what a great place she's in. Yeah. And she's doing so much better and everything looks great and she's awesome and she's talented and she looks great. And like, you know, and it's like, this is so clearly kind of like you're trying to make it out like it's like this fairy tale, like, and now I'm better. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, even though like, of course, like there was these interjections of like, you know, and this might not work for everyone. And I, you know, I don't want to, maybe I will relapse. I hope I don't, like, you know, like I really worry for her, whatever. Like, you know, like there were those kind of like interjections, but it's like not enough to trump the overall storyline of I was bad and now I'm better. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. And I think like, to me, I feel like celebrities have a responsibility to be conscious, not to be a role model. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that, you know, Demi has to be like this perfect picture of sobriety or this perfect picture of a struggling addict. Like, you know, because to me, it's like that was a really good depiction of somebody who is still struggling with addiction, very much so.
Yeah.
Because I know about addiction.
Yeah.
You know, but to somebody else, like that is not what that's going to translate as. So like I don't think that she has a responsibility to be a role model for anything. I just think that it's important to be conscious, like you said, like what you're putting out there and what you're saying and how you're saying it or not saying it, you know?
Well, and like you said, the time thing is a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. Like if she had done this for 20 years and then said something like, I'm so lucky that I'm one of mm-hmm. the few that moderation works for.
Yeah.
That would have been like, okay, if that's what you said about it, sure.
Yeah.
Go for it. And if it had been long enough, you know?
Yeah. But it's like this, I would say it's been definitely under 5 years. I don't know the exact timeline. Potentially even.
Well, because in the documentary, her friend said the weed thing is very new. Mm. So it was very new as of the time of filming. And it was, I mean, they were sanitizing things, so it's within the last year and a half.
Yeah, COVID, yeah.
So it's really, to me, it's just not long enough. And even like when I talk about my sobriety, I just don't feel like I even pose it that way. I say, I'm just not going to drink today. Mm-hmm. And when I do, when people ask me, like, what do? I really try to say, this is what worked for me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I always try to be mindful and try to say, like, you know, everybody's different. This is what, you know, I have podcasts that I've talked about it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say that, like, I'm a better sober person or anything like that.
But I think just recognizing that it does... it's not one size fits all. No. And it does look different on everyone, because, you know, like, I think, you know, you were lucky in that you didn't have to go through rehab. You didn't, like, that's not what sobriety looked like for you, and that worked for you. That's not inherently true for everyone. Yeah. I don't think Matt would have gotten clean if he hadn't gone to rehab. I think he doesn't believe that either.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it does look different for everybody, and I say that maybe there are like rare cases where moderation works, because I don't know.
Yeah.
maybe there is. I don't necessarily believe that either. Like, I don't think that, I think that even if that ends up working for you, I think that that's such an anomaly that it's not even worth really saying, like, you know, that it works or it worked for you, because it's like, that's just, to me, like, happenstance kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. And I think that it does look so different on everyone, and it's important to recognize that and acknowledge that as like a main point that like this is different for everybody, but not in a way where like you're then justifying kind of like one over the other kind of thing, and especially not like glorifying something in the way that I feel like they did in that documentary.
I have more to say. Oh my gosh, I'm never letting it die.
It's okay.
This is the other thing for me.
It's an important topic.
Yeah. And like, I just feel like it's very close to you and I. Do you know what I mean?
Clearly we're fucking, we've already had this discussion, by the way, like three times, like off camera.
We can't let it go.
No.
The other thing that bothers me about the idea of moderation, just out of, not even like to do with this documentary or anything, is that for some reason we need it. That you can't have a beautiful life sober. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a quote from Elton John, but I just watched his part back and he didn't say that. So I like, he said something similar.
Yeah.
But I truly believe that. I truly believe that you can have a beautiful, fulfilling life without substances.
Yeah.
And this idea that like, it's better to be able to drink. It's better to be able to smoke weed if you want to.
Yeah.
For some people, they enjoy it. Yeah. You know, it's a recreational activity. But I just want to make it known, like, you can have an extremely beautiful life sober.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need those things. It's you can have really, like, almost, like, psychedelic experiences completely sober.
Yeah.
You can get into flow states. You can find things through meditation and through, like, connection with a partner and stuff like that. Like, there's ways that you can elicit these feelings without substances, not the exact feelings, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're chemically created.
Yeah, for sure.
But I've found things that make me feel like, oh wow.
Yeah.
Like that was like a huge, like, you know what I mean? And through complete sobriety, and amazing things can happen to you as well when you're clear-minded and focused, and that doesn't necessarily mean like hustling or anything like that, but you know, through the fog, so to speak.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I can say that as somebody that never really partook in, I've had drinks before and stuff, but, you know, as someone that has never consistently taken part of, like, any substances, I don't feel like I live a lesser life because of it. I mean, there's instances where maybe I feel left out of things, but I never once have been like, oh, I'm sacrificing. I'm living less of a life because I don't drink or, you know, partake in whatever. Like I still went to parties and I enjoyed them and still went out with friends and enjoyed it. And, you know, it's there are like options beyond that. And I think there's also worth mentioning, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I feel like, you know, using substances as a way of coping is so normalized, and it's seen as something that's almost like, yeah, like you come home, you unwind with a glass of wine, and that's seen as like perfectly okay. But for some reason, like other forms of self-care that don't involve substances are kind of seen as like a waste of time.
Yeah.
Like that you're not being productive or you're not whatever. And it's so weird that it's viewed that way. Like, you know, like, well, that's an appropriate way to wind down. That's an appropriate way to cope with stress and sadness and breakups and whatever kind of thing. But like taking a bath or going on a walk, well, that's kind of like a fucking waste of time. So,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
There's so many ways of coping. And if you're at a point where you feel like you can't cope without substances, I think it's important to mention that there's so many options, and not all of those options may be available to you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's also important to note, but
Well, and especially during COVID, it's absolutely horrendous. And even in Canada where we don't, you know, our options aren't the greatest, but they're like good in comparison to a lot of other places. But it's so hard right now for people to get beds because they're, you know, you're allowed six people in an entire, you know, thing. It's like,
well, and you can't have your normal support system around potentially. Like you might not be able to be near the people that help you, you know, cope in whatever way with whatever you're dealing with.
So even more dangerous of a time.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
But I mean, you know, I think overall it was just disappointing, but
yeah.
Worth mentioning that, you know, there's help out there.
Yeah.
And you can lead a very beautiful life sober, and that's it.
That's it.
I mean, it's not it.
I could literally go on forever.
I could literally like play the documentary and stop it every 12 seconds and be like, and another thing that I need to talk, like, you know, it's just, it's hard. It's obviously like a topic that's very close to both of us, and and it's such a tricky thing, and it's so sad how many people it impacts, and it's sad that, you know, to me, I just feel like that was such a disservice.
Yeah. It makes it worse to me that there was money made off of it.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, it promoted, like, an album at the end, and...
Yeah.
Which, of course, like, that's just, it is just what it is.
I mean, that's showbiz, baby, but yeah. I don't know.
And we're going to go monetize this, and we're going to probably have ads on this episode.
And so the wheel turns.
Yeah, exactly.
So true. Yeah. You know. Maybe I'll get off my high horse for a fucking second.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's tricky. And that's the thing is, like, you know, you and I think we can speak to, you know, also making mistakes in the public eye, and also doing or saying what we should have, or not saying enough, or whatever. Like, it's really hard. And I don't mean to make it seem like I think that everyone should be perfect, and I think that they have this incredible responsibility on their shoulders. In fact, quite the opposite. I think that it's just, like, dangerous to pose things as being so, I think that the context was given, and then it was kind of like, but forget about that, because let's forget about everything we know to be true,
yeah,
about my experience. And now let's just round it out with, I'm fine now and everything's great and I'm enjoying moderation. And here's me having cute margaritas with my friends,
yeah,
in Palm Springs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
There's just, okay, so here's what I'll say. There's certain people that I look up to for my sobriety journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's certain people that I wouldn't look to for advice.
Yeah.
That's just the way that it is.
Agreed. Well, I'm not on a sobriety journey, but yeah.
I mean, fucking man, two in the house, basically you are. We keep a fucking dry house up in his bitch.
Yeah.
Just kidding. We don't, you know, but.
Yeah.
You could bring beer here for a party one time if you wanted. It's fun.
Yeah. It's, you know. But it's not.
It's not a rager up in the Team 2 house. No,
not often, that's for sure. We do partake in an awful lot of bubble baths as an alternative.
When you said that, I was like, oh, so weird. That is what I use to wind down my days. I'm always up in the bath at the end of the night, whereas it used to be like 8 to 10 beers.
PBRs, yeah.
Oh, man, the PBRs. Okay, anyway, let it die, man.
Yeah, I would be interested, for those of you that watched it, I'd be interested to know what you guys thought, and also what you guys think, you know, celebrities' responsibility is around all the things.
Yeah, we had more that we were going to talk about, but then we just...
I kind of figured.
Yeah, we couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Goodbye!
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with 2 chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.